To start us off, I want to go over a quote that I think will set us up really well for this time. So the quote reads, "Forgiveness is not always easy. At times, it feels more painful than the wound that we suffered to forgive the one who inflicted it. And yet, there is no peace without forgiveness." What is forgiveness? Let's define it. Webster defines it as to pardon, to remit, as an offense or debt, to overlook an offense, and to treat the offender as not guilty. Other definitions read, to stop feeling angry or resentful towards someone for an offense, flaw, or mistake. There's many examples of forgiveness. One example is when someone cuts you off in traffic and flips you off. That's actually a true story. Jacob was in the car with me. That happened on the way here to church. So that is a small situation, but it still requires forgiveness. Or when a drunk driver kills a mother's two sons on the day that he was released for his third DWI. That also requires forgiveness. So we see two different situations with two different degrees of pain, and yet they require the same thing. So guys, forgiveness can be a difficult topic to navigate because the severity of the offense, or it seems that someone's wronged us just one too many times. And in your mind, it seems like this is the last straw. This is it. But before you kind of justify your unforgiveness, I want to look at what Jesus tells Peter when he brings up the topic of forgiveness when someone continually sins against you. So we're going to read what Jesus told Peter and the disciples about forgiveness and the lack thereof in the book of Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 through 30. Jesus is teaching how to approach a matter if your brother sins against you. Now we'll pick up in verse 21 when Peter is asking a question that we've all wondered before. So let's take a deeper look in verse 21. So it says, "Then Peter came up and said, 'Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times?' So the Pharisees used to teach that a man must be forgiven three times. And then after that, you can be done with him. Wipe your hands clean of him. You don't have to forgive him any other times after that. You don't have to interact with him any other times after that. And when we look at this, it's a lot like what we see today. When someone gets wronged, it's like, man, I'm cutting them off. We don't even give them a chance to offend us three times. It's after the first time. We cut them out of our lives completely. Or we say, man, I'm going to give them one more chance. And if they mess this up, I'm never forgiving them again. But Peter went beyond the teaching of his day with only forgiving three times, with forgiving seven times. Here, Peter probably thought that he was going to impress Jesus. He was like, man, it's three times, man. What about seven times, Jesus? Is that enough? And the answer that Jesus gives, Peter really wasn't prepared for, it doesn't seem like. Let's look at verse 22. It says, "Jesus said to him, 'I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times.'" Does that mean that on the 78th time that you stop forgiving? No. But this is to show believers how we should be in a constant state of forgiveness. Here we see Jesus raises the bar, as he's done many times before in Scripture. Sometimes being, if you have hate in your heart, you have committed murder. If you have looked at a woman with lust in your eyes, and you have committed adultery. Jesus is just raising the bar again here. And when you think about it, at the end of the day, Jesus wants us to be like him. In every thought, in every word, and in every deed, Christ is the standard. He taught that this expectation was beyond us. He raises the bar to a point that only God can reach it. Church, this is something that is not possible for us to do in our own power. To forgive our brother so many times and to be in this constant state of forgiveness. This kind of forgiveness is only possible with God, as he gives us the power and the ability to forgive. In essence, Jesus is teaching that we must keep no record of wrong. We must forgive, period. Not make them jump through all these loops for our forgiveness, not to make them apologize for the wrong that they've done to us, and certainly not to hold a grudge secretly against this person. Doesn't that sound a lot like 1 Corinthians 13:5? Love does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered, and it keeps no record of wrong. So church, people are going to fail us and they're going to fail you again and again. And you are still called to forgive again and again. And not this worldly counterfeit kind of forgiveness, but a forgiveness that comes from Christ. And that being a forgiveness that's from the heart. Now we see that Jesus has raised the bar for all of his children to forgive. That being in a way that is an anomaly to this world. It looks different. It's unusual. Now let's look at what forgiveness looks like in the parable that Jesus follows with in verses 23 through 27. So it says, "Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle his accounts with his servant. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything.' And out of pity for him, the master of the servant released him and forgave him the debt." Here, Jesus is illustrating the gospel. The gospel is just so present in this parable. He compares the kingdom of heaven like to this parable of this king forgiving his servant of all of his debt, a debt that's insurmountable. We see very distinctly the comparison of mankind being in the servant's position. So the servant and mankind is very comparable. And we also see that because of the king's mercy for believers, it's grace in Christ, the debt is forgiven. Jesus explains how we're to live in the proper kingdom. Jesus uses this parable to help his disciples understand that there is a new standard on earth for his people. It is no longer only forgiving three times, but it's a new standard. This theology sets the bar on perfection. As we said earlier, it's a bar that only God can reach and that we can only reach through Christ. It gets them lined up to the standard that God expects us to have. Jesus explains that their condition before God is like a servant who owes 10,000 talents. Jesus didn't specify whether it was 10,000 talents of silver or of gold, but let's just get the modern dollar amount for silver, which is the lesser amount. The servant would have owed $250 million. Could you imagine owing someone $250 million? They could sell me, Lenny, Boomer, all that I have, and I still would not be able to pay them. This is a kind of debt that is so large that this man sold everything that he had, or he got sold with everything that he had, and it still wasn't enough. Jesus uses this dollar amount to show how much debt the servant had to pay. So, by the way, guys, if it was gold, it would be $20 billion that you owe someone. $20 billion. The servant didn't have a payment plan. He didn't have a family member he could ask. The only thing that he could do was plead with the king. This is a great picture of our helplessness without Christ, and also the mercy and goodness of God to forgive our debt. Church, if you're in Christ, this is what you have been forgiven of, a debt that you could not possibly even begin to pay. So now that we have grasped a firm understanding of this impossible debt that this servant has been forgiven of, and our debt that we have been forgiven of in Christ, let's look at how the servant responded to his fellow co-worker who owed him a debt. "But when the same servant went out, he found one of his servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, 'Pay what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you.' He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt." Guys, this is the same servant that just left this meeting with the king where he was pleading not to be sold. So he went out and found a fellow servant. We don't know if he was searching for this fellow servant or if he just stumbled upon him. But what we do know is this is right after he got forgave of his debt. The servant, upon finding his fellow servant who owed him 100 denarii, which in modern dollars would be $25,000, began to choke him of this debt. Not only did he choke him, but when he pleaded in the same way that he did before the king, he put him in prison until he paid every dime of the debt. I just think about how angry you have to be to choke someone. Like, hitting someone's one thing. Little kids hit each other. But to take the oxygen out of someone's lungs, you have to be very angry. And this servant was that angry because of a debt that someone owed him. The same thing that he just did on a larger scale. He was forgiven of a $250 million debt, but he wouldn't forgive a $25,000 debt. This forgiveness that he had experienced from the king should have affected his entire life. But instead, he allowed what seemed to be pride to affect his view on forgiving someone else who owed him. Church, this is how ridiculous we look as Christians when we don't forgive. Jesus uses this dollar amount to explain our sin. This huge, unpayable debt equates to how huge and unpayable the debt of our sin is. The servant was unaffected and indifferent when it came to the debt that he owed the king. And out of that entitlement and indifference, he locked up someone who owed him something that was not even close to what he originally owed. Some of the harshest language in the Bible has been used towards believers in unforgiveness. Man, if y'all get a chance, go to Bible Gateway and type in forgiveness. And there's some pretty harsh language when it talks about a believer who does not forgive as they have been forgiven. Let's look at how forgiveness occurs. So if you're taking notes this morning, you can write this down. Unilateral forgiveness and then transactional forgiveness. So to explain, unilateral forgiveness is when you forgive an offender without them knowing. And transactional forgiveness is when you forgive someone who comes to you seeking for your forgiveness. Some of you might be in a spot where you have to exercise unilateral forgiveness because the person has passed away, or you've lost all contact with them, or they just don't think that they've done anything wrong. And then some of you might be in a spot to where you have to exercise transactional forgiveness. Someone has come to you and acknowledged their wrong and that they want your forgiveness. But instead of forgiving them, your heart is hard towards them. And you have chosen to be comfortable in your sin and unforgiveness rather than to forgive as you have been forgiven. I got the mercy of seeing both of these examples with my parents. It was really cool. So with my dad, it was more of a unilateral forgiveness. And with my mom, it was a transactional forgiveness. So to kind of break it down, I grew up in like a really abusive household. My childhood was full of neglect, abuse, evictions. So I was very uncared for growing up. My sister and I were. And so with my dad, he thought just because he was present that he was a good father. Because years before, his father had never been there. The first time he met his dad, he was 5 years old and his dad was in a casket. So he thought just because he had been there that it was okay. So for him, he doesn't think he's done anything wrong. All the pain and all the suffering that me and my sister had to endure during our childhood, he thinks that he did a good job because he was present. My dad will probably never ask for forgiveness, and I have to be okay with that. I've still forgiven him, and I am taking steps to move towards him in love when he allows it. But I have to forgive even though he doesn't believe he needs to be forgiven. So when we first think of sin, all sin is first against God. So if Christ can forgive me for every sin that I've committed against him, all of the wretched and evil things that I've committed against him, then I can forgive my father for all the wretched and evil things that he has done to me. With my mom, it was more of a transactional forgiveness. When I was older in college, she came to me and she was weeping. She was like, "Cam, I just blew it as a mother. I did awful. Will you forgive me?" And my first reaction wasn't, "Oh, yes, mother, I love you. I'll forgive you." It was like, "Heck yeah, you did an awful job. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, you should have asked me for forgiveness 10 years ago." But the Lord had been growing my heart for my mom and me praying for her. Before I came to Christ, my parents were not going to know who my children were. So I was like the world was, I cut them out of my life and they were canceled. But because of the Spirit and wise counsel, it got made to me very clearly that since I had been forgiven, I can forgive. So even though what I experienced growing up was truly terrible, even though there was nights I went hungry, even though there was nights I slept in a car or saw my dad put a gun up to my mother's head, I could forgive because Christ had forgiven me. So this was a example of transactional forgiveness because she came to me acknowledging her wrong and seeking for restoration of that relationship. And now our relationship is better than ever. It's better than it has been for my entire life. And it started with remembering the gospel and Christ's forgiveness that he's first shown me. So church, this American or worldly forgiveness, where they say it's a process, or I'm not there yet, or I can love them from a distance. This is a counterfeit forgiveness that is not true, that is not biblical, that is not what we should be following. These are phrases that Christians use to make their lives easier. But instead of making their lives easier, they're ultimately fooling themselves to walk in sin. Church, when we make these excuses, we are fooling ourselves to walk in sin and rebellion to God. We are called to forgive as Christ has forgiven us. That is biblical forgiveness. Let's look at some practical steps to forgiveness. Like, how can we start moving towards someone in forgiveness? First, let's talk about when you wrong someone. So when you're just ugly, awful, when you haven't eaten, when you're just ugly towards someone, or when there's an argument, how can you move towards someone in love? So with arguments and conflict, the reason that I bring this up is usually there's sin on both sides. Give an example. So if Lenny and I get into an argument, even if she started it, even if she just came in upset or whatever, somewhere in there, either I have been impatient, quick to anger, I said something that didn't build her up, or I just wasn't being understanding. And that's my sin in the argument. So I still need to move towards her and ask for forgiveness instead of sitting back waiting for her to ask for my forgiveness first and then apologizing. So whenever you wrong someone, don't say, "I'm sorry." I know some of y'all are like, "Cam, what? You just said ask for forgiveness." Like, no, don't say, "I'm sorry," but instead ask, "Will you forgive me?" When you ask a person, "Will you forgive me?" you're humbling yourself and swallowing your pride. And it's just so much more powerful. And it's really hard to do when we look at it. Instead of saying, "I'm sorry," ask, "Will you forgive me?" Because sometimes we can say, "I'm sorry," and not really mean it. There's other times where we use "I'm sorry" as kind of a defense mechanism, so a person can't explain to us how we've wronged them. So if a person's saying, "Hey, like, it really hurt me when you did this," and you say, "I'm sorry," they can't even get a chance to finish it. And then whenever they're trying to finish it or bring it up to talk to you about it, "I said I'm sorry." It's a defense mechanism, so we don't have to deal with our mess ups or how we hurt them. So don't say "I'm sorry." Instead, ask, "Will you forgive me?" And you put the ball in their court, and they have to be faced with the thought of, "Man, I need to forgive them as Christ has forgiven me." And it's a whole sanctification process that's beautiful, you know? So when it comes to forgiveness, evaluate what you did wrong, ask for their forgiveness without expecting them to ask you for your forgiveness. So you have like an awesome, like, "Man, I'm come to Jesus moment and apologize to someone." Don't sit there and tap your foot or twiddle your thumbs waiting on them to say, "Oh, well, I'm sorry too." That's their walk with the Lord. And if they don't do that, then I'm sorry, but that's not what Christian forgiveness is called to look like. It's not contingent on the other person forgiving us first. We talked about what it looks like when you sin against someone. Now let's talk about when someone sins against you. So remember, forgiveness isn't given because it is deserved. If y'all write anything in y'all's notes, write that. Forgiveness isn't given because it is deserved. But still, Jesus calls us to forgive from the heart and not with some counterfeit forgiveness. Jesus doesn't bring up the way that we have wronged him. Jesus doesn't say, "I'm not ready to forgive you yet." He doesn't say that his forgiveness is a process like we always tend to hear. As hard as this is, if we don't forgive from our heart, we are living in sin. So if you've forgiven someone 80%, I was at this spot with my dad for a long time. I had forgiven him 80%, but that other 20% I was holding on to, I am deliberately walking in sin because I have not forgiven him fully from the heart. Some of you might say, "Oh, Cam, like, you don't understand. You have no idea of the pain that they have caused me." And the truth is, I don't. The truth is, I can't. And I wish that I could so I could know how to love you and care for you better. But I tell you that Christ does. and he loves you so much, and he cares for you so much. And he proved that on the cross. I also want to remind you, church, not to forget that our God is a just judge. And whoever sinned against you, know that it's going to be handled. No one gets away with sin. No one. There is going to be a reckoning for all sin, and either it was taken care of on the cross, or it will be taken care of on Judgment Day. So you can rest in the fact that God knows and sees, and no deed goes unjudged. I know that forgiveness can seem like a huge task for some of you to work through. You might be tempted to leave here saying that, Cam, that was good up there, but it's still a process for me. I've been hurting for years. And not even addressing this heart issue that unforgiveness is. And as believers, like I said earlier, we kind of make compromises when we're required to do something that causes us to fight sin or kill our sin. So, church, I want to encourage you not to do that here. Truly fight and wrestle with forgiveness and with your unforgiveness. Like I said earlier, it's not given because it is deserved. It is given because Christ commands it. So, church, if you feel like you don't have the power or the will to forgive, that's true. You're right. You don't have the power to forgive. It is only through Christ in us that we have the power to forgive those who have wronged us. So if you rely on Christ's power in you, then and only then will you find it that you can forgive properly. Jesus says in John 15:5, apart from me, you can do nothing. You can't forgive. You can't walk in a manner that's worthy of him. You can't live a life that's honoring to God in any way, because apart from Christ, you can do nothing. So here are three little application steps as we wrap up today. As you drive home, or as you sit down in your prayer closet this week, or when you're out eating lunch, or whenever, just do these three steps. So first, remember the gospel. Remember that we were in the same position that that servant was, owing a debt that we could not pay, even if we sold everything, and even if we were sold. Just start there. Secondly, start thinking of those that you have not truly forgiven. Think of those people that when their name's brought up, your mood changes, or when they walk into a room, your attitude adjusts. Think of those people that you have not truly forgiven. And then step three is to start praying that God could give you the power to forgive them, and that it would be a true, genuine forgiveness, one that's of the heart. So, church, when we remind ourselves of the gospel and how Christ forgave us of all the evil and wicked things that we have done, it becomes a lot easier to forgive those who have done wicked and evil things to us.